हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगराधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। जय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
ॐ नमो
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 2, text number 8. Dharma svanushtitah pumsa visvakse nakata suyaha notpadayat yadiratim shrama eva kevalam. The occupational activities a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead, purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. There are different occupational activities in terms of man's different conceptions of life. The gross materialist who cannot see anything beyond the gross material body, there is nothing beyond the senses. Therefore, his occupational activities are limited to concentrated and extended selfishness. Concentrated selfishness centers around the personal body. This is generally seen among the lower animals. Extended selfishness is manifested in human society and centers around the family, society, community, nation, and world with a view to gross bodily comfort. Above these gross materialists are the mental speculators who, however, live in the mental spheres. And their occupational duties involve making poetry and philosophy or propagating some ism with the same aim of selfishness limited to the body and the mind. But above the body and the mind is the dormant spirit soul, whose absence from the body makes the whole range of bodily and mental selfishness completely null and void. But less intelligent people here know information of the needs of the spirit soul. This is the part of the purport. Can I continue or?
We could see, it's when you have knowledge, you have action and all this. And so in the material platform you have the modes of nature. And so within the material context, everything's controlled by the modes of nature. In the spiritual world, then everything is controlled by the internal potency. So here is that when you're dealing on the knowledge to do with the bodily platform, that's considered knowledge in the mode of ignorance. And that means all of it, right? Now, when higher than that, as Prabhupada's pointing out, then you have knowledge in which you can gain sense gratification, right? There can be benefit. Like you said, you have the self-centered element, that it's about the bodily concept. And then there's the extended where you can get more, more something out of it, the society, the extended selfishness. And, that'll be the motive. Then you have that knowledge which is based on the soul. So now if you're taking, like let's say the Vedic knowledge. Oh, yeah. And it also would mean that when you do things out of duty, activities done because it's your duty, it means it's the proper. That would be the motive, goodness. Things done because you want to benefit from it, that will be passion. And those things that are what shouldn't be done is done, and what should be done is not done, that would be ignorance. So you can see is that if you're performing your duties with the understanding that we're the soul and not the body, then that will situate it in goodness. You're doing those same duties, but you want the material benefits, that will make it into passion. And then you give up those prescribed duties for whatever some concocted ideas. And that then develops the motive, ignorance. So you can see is that all these different levels can all come together and be all centered around sense gratification. So the Dharmarthakam and Moksha then has that material sphere, that material circle, that you have the general persons who are interested in themselves, a little bit more mature than they see the greater society, and then those that can take advantage of that and perform, how you say, do economics so that everything expands. Then you have those, the religious understanding that there is some laws and everything. And then you have the understanding that we're the soul, but they don't understand actually the soul's relationship with the Lord. So all that will fit within the maximum they can get is motive goodness. So even these, how do you call those? Impersonalists, right? The Brahmavadis, is that you're doing, you're performing your duties, whatever is appropriate. And, with the understanding that you're the soul, and they're focusing on that, and they're trying to see so that they can see that the soul is separate from the body, and that the soul is, an eternal particle, then that will situate them in goodness, right? Now, following that realization up to the point where they understand the soul is Brahman, and they understand that non-difference between themselves as Brahman and the Supreme Brahman, that will bring them to the pinnacle that you can get in the mode of goodness. It never goes beyond goodness. It should be understood. The impersonalists, the Mayavadis, the Brahmavadi, all that group, they never get beyond the mode of goodness. They're never actually functioning on the platform of Naishkarmya. I mean, excuse me, Nirguna. They're never beyond the modes. Only bhakti is beyond the modes. Only bhakti comes to that platform. That's the unique thing. It can destroy karma, and it's beyond the modes. So therefore, then, now if we look at this, then engaging the senses, we're engaging Krishna service, we're seeing to the, community of devotees and family, and how they're becoming Krishna conscious in relation to Krishna. We're understanding how, the laws of nature and all that work because Krishna is the controller of all that. And, we perform all our duties as is given in Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, but for Krishna, right? And we understand that we're not the body or the soul, but we understand our relationship with Krishna. Then you're always working on the transcendental platform. This is Nirguna. So bhakti is always functioning in Nirguna, whether it's a neophyte or someone very advanced. It's just how deep you're going to go. What's the depth that you go? That you understand, okay, I'm the soul, I'm not the body. So that starts out the sat aspect. Now, chit, you understand, okay, you have a relationship with Krishna, and there's and that, and then you act in that relationship, and the goal is to to please Krishna, right? But that can also then deepen where you have an attraction to Krishna. Therefore, you express that attraction through action. And, when Krishna is pleased, you're pleased. So the process can always keep going deeper and deeper and deeper. But the point is that devotees, they're themselves, they're doing well there. And so that's why, since you're working on the platform of pure goodness rather than goodness, therefore then the Vedic activities and recommendations that are supportive of your position in the mode of goodness, then, from that platform of pure goodness, then, which will be goodness, then is what's recommended. In other words, goodness being done without any desire for sense gratification, it means without karma or jnana, and without ignorance, is going to be pure goodness, right? Goodness will be where you have the aspect of what you're doing, what's proper, but there's still an idea, I will be happy from this in some way at some point. And there's always ignorance because you don't know your relationship with the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So it's always in the material world, it's always mixed. Right? And so pure goodness means that ignorance is gone and there's no interest in karma and jnana. Or you could say there's no interest in karma and jnana because the ignorance is gone. And so that's the platform that one is trying to function on. One should understand this. And that's why then certain things are recommended, like what we see, that we're going to work with a religious platform. So Daiva Varnashram, right? We're not interested in Varnashram. We're interested in Daiva Varnashram. So in other words, Varnashram is the whole array of all the Vedic rules and regulations for the human being, who will be functioning within Dharma, Karma, Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. Daiva Varnashram means that human being who is interested in serving Krishna, who's practicing bhakti, right? That's their path, is bhakti, not Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. And so therefore there's basic personal how you say personal duties, social duties, the greater duties like that, and understandings that if you're not the body, how you would function and all that. So all those elements of Varna and Ashram, and those are then used in pure bhakti, right? So the Daiva Varnashram, because we see in the spiritual world, it's all working by Varnashram. Say what you like, but Krishna is a a Vaishya in Vrindavan, and he has his elders, he's respecting them. That's one of the first things that Mana talks about, like that. And then you see is that once a year they go and pay their taxes to the Kshatriyas in Mathura. Right, you have the local yogic Brahmins are there, right, and you have all the assistants and all those things like that. So all four Varnas are there in Mathura Mandala. Right, you go to Dwarka, it's the same. You go to Vaikuntha, it's the same. It's all there. That's the lifestyle. So that's the Daiva Varnashram. Right, and so then, and especially Vrindavan, because it has that spontaneous element, then. It's a little bit more relaxed in that the formality is not as great, but the positions and everything still remain. So when you come to the material world, because it's not centered on Krishna, therefore you need to fill out the things and make it more structured. Therefore, it expands. Daiva Varnashram then becomes Varnashram, where there's all the different rules and regulations and everything are there, so that the material world will, function. In other words, the soul, Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha is not enough for it to work, right? You have to have bhakti. But since there is a material world that's not based on bhakti, therefore then the rules have to be more strict and all that, and that means you have to pay more attention, put more devotion in. So by making the rules greater in the material world, you increase the bhakti element that you have to perform the karma and jnana with, right? So the idea is that that the more devoted you are to the karma or jnana, the knowledge, the understanding, the following the rules and regulations, the etiquettes, all the things, the better will be the result. In other words, you increase the bhakti that you're using as mechanically, it will increase the benefits. So, but the idea is you're supposed to increase the bhakti to please Krishna and give up trying to please yourself with it and change it from just karma into karma yoga. jhana into jnana yoga. That's just then being, that's the whole idea. So once you switch it, since that's the main thing, then you don't have as many details. The principles all remain the same because it's coming from the spiritual world. But the details, they have to be in line with the principle. So that's the whole thing, is why we will choose those prescribed duties given by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and avoid those that are just mental speculation, as Prabhupada mentioned there. The intellectuals, they speculate on this and that. That's also interesting, is that the knowledge with doubt, that's the mode of passion. So in other words, you see, is the academics, their situation is mode of passion. We'll take it, oh, they're Brahmins, they're intellectuals, it's mode of goodness. No, their position is mode of passion, because their knowledge, they don't want a conclusion. If there's a conclusion, what's next? I have duties I have to perform. If I'm the soul and Krishna's God and I have a relationship of service, then I have to serve. That means I have to take up my duties. They don't want to do that. They want to have it, well, it could be this, but it could be that. You know, because the doubt creates options, even though it may be negative, but it's still options. Right? The living entity likes options, right? So therefore, that's why they keep all the options open, right? It means if they have their own theory and they want to establish it and become famous for that, of course they'll try to get rid of anything else. But it only works because there's the environment in the academy that there can be doubt. In fact, the what they call it the what do you call it? The academic method, or like that, means finding fault, creating doubt in the already existing theory, or someone's work, or someone's research. You have to find a doubt. That's critical thinking. Oh yes, you're being if you can find so many doubts, but if you go, no, this is what's correct, they'll say that's not critical thinking, because it's not critical. Critical means finding fault. It's like political correctness means it's politics. That is the accepted correct method at the time. Right? It's not based on an absolute. So in the same way, critical thinking is based on being critical, finding fault. If I ever find a fault, that means my intelligence is greater than the person I found fault in. Therefore, I'm superior. Hey. And that's the whole point. So it's mode of passion. It's not mode of goodness. Mode of goodness is your duty. What's your duty? You're supposed to study and teach. That's the duty. But why are they coming up with all these isms about how people are going to, their extended selfishness and everything's going to be fabulous? You know, the more selfish you are, the more fabulous it'll be. Never. It's the more you have the mood of service. So we see is that the basis is there, and then the Western society, that is all based on what's doing what's not recommended. Right? And so that's mode of ignorance. So that's why Prabhupada says passion and ignorance. It's basically ignorance, and there's a touch of passion that it moves forward. The businessmen are passionate enough to make money. The intellectuals are passionate enough to, open a university and pontificate like that. The governments are passionate enough to, get control of the people like that. But otherwise, other than that, it's just ignorance. So that passion is just that little bit. What benefit I'll get, so I'll enjoy. I have more money, I'll enjoy, so I work for it. I have more control, therefore I'll be enjoy more, so I work for that. Or I'll have more knowledge or influence like this, then I'll work for it. So that little bit of passion just makes them work within the realm of ignorance.
Maharaj,
You know, but
Mahakarunas.
yes, Mahakarunaji.
I had this doubt for some time. Are there any need for the sannyas ashram in the spiritual world, and if so, why?
For pastimes. In the spiritual world, everything's pastimes.
Okay.
You know, so it's just like you've heard that, okay, so we have a pastime. Right now, if you won't have brudge, right?
Yes.
You moved down there. Okay, good. Shifted. I was looking at the spot, and then Someone else is sitting there, right? Okay, you shift it. Okay, so Srimati Radharani is not married to Krishna, right?
No.
Okay, so now the point is you want to have opportunities for Radha and Krishna to be able to interact at whatever situation, right? Because conjugal ras, you want it something to happen, be able to happen at all times. Friendship is at this time, a parental is at that time, a conjugal, it can take up all times, right? It's the Adi Rasa. So therefore, it has that capacity to function at all times, all places, all circumstances, right? Other things you have to, make adjustments. So therefore, then, one of the main things is when he's at home, then what's happening at home, right? It's his mother's place. And what are mothers famous for doing for their children? Cooking, okay. So now, therefore, then to be able to assist her in the cooking, in a dynamic, why would she want her there to cook? Because, the mother knows best and the mother is the best cook and everything's the best about the mom, right? So that means that Radharani has to somehow or another be famous for her, not only that she's good at cooking, because if she's good at cooking, then others could be jealous or envious and this and that, and there could be a whole competition there. So you want something that you don't have that competition, not on this platform, right? So it has to be that her cooking is the person who eats her cooking will be healthy and long-lived. No mother can say because what she cooks, it's automatically blessed that it will give long life and health to whoever eats it. Right? It'll be good and it's most likely good for their health. And because health is good, they'll live long, but you can't guarantee. This is guaranteed. You eat this, you how you say? You live long and prosper, right? Right? Okay. Yes? Okay. So now, how does she have that benediction? Where do all the famous benedictions come from? Right? From Durvasa Muni, so from a sannyasi, so because he's there, then everybody, respects and all that. Anybody can get that mercy, and at the same time, it's because of that position, they have that potency that they can give such benedictions, and they actually work. So, good or not good?
Oh, very
Yeah.
good.
So then, not a problem.
Okay.
Then you have Narad Muni, you have like they, so you have those, the four Kumaras and that. So you have all kinds of elements where that position of that renunciation and all that is very much appreciated. So it's an actually part because there's someone that you can go to and this and that, just like the Brahmin in society, he's supposed to be equal pose, so therefore you see the if you didn't have the thing about Brahmins are higher, then how do you get this pastime, right? Now, the parents, are a little bit worried about this boy that moves around in the forest, that there's all kinds of scandalous rumors coming in about, right? Now the gopis want to go out into the forest, right? Because they have their different duties. They pick flowers. They go worship they go to the sun god, temple of the sun god, and worship, right? But they can't go out because now all their mother-in-laws are keeping them at home, right? Now, into the scene, we're going to bring in Maru Mangal, right? How old is Maru Mangal?
Young.
Yeah, he's a kid, right? So if it's in the Paugandha or in this case, it might be in the Kishore pastimes, he's going to be, like, 12 years old or something. But we know from the, I think Rasa Dance that it comes earlier because they may use the earlier ages so that no one can get confused. But in any case, he's young. Now you have these elder gopis, who are much more, older, more experienced in life and everything like that. But why will they listen to him as a Brahmin to take advice?
Because of his
Right?
position.
Because of his position as a Brahmin. So even though he's a kid and they're you could say, middle-aged adults, they listen to him because he's the Brahmin and they're just the Vaishyas. So their complaining is that, keeping the girls at home, and that's a reaction because they don't interact nicely with their husbands, means they don't behave badly, they just don't put any attention or affection. Right? And so they're saying that, this is the worst thing can happen, right? And so how to resolve this? And so then they ask Manu Mangal, because he's a Brahmin, he may know, because Brahmins know, Manu mentions that if you have a 10-year-old Brahmin and a 90-year-old Kshatriya, right? Because someone who's 90 years old, even if he's a Shudra, he's to be respected. Everybody respects. Right? So like that. So a 90-year-old Kshatriya means he's a Kshatriya and he's on top of that respectable because he's 90. And the Brahmin is 10 years old. And so Manu says their relation is like father and son. The Brahmin's the father, the Kshatriya is the son. Right? There's no ifs, ands, or buts about this. If someone's a devotee, that's another thing because then we're dealing, everybody's on the Brahminical platform. So then you take the maturity and knowledge and all these other things. But if we're just talking Varnashram like that. So therefore, then he has that position that he can tell them what to do. So now he's thinking, well, that they're not paying attention to their husbands and not necessarily absorbed in their household duties. We need to increase their piety, right? So in other words, there's something impious going on here. That they're not, it's the natural, the husbands and wife interact, the duties and all that. So we need to increase the piety. So now that means they need to go every day at noontime to the sun temple, the sun god's temple, and perform worship. And to do that, they'll have to go out early, they have to pick flowers and other arrangements that they need to get for paraphernalia, and then go do this worship. Right? And so, and then they will want not only accrue more piety, and if they're more pious, then that means then relationships will be better. And then because they, as also from Manu, then the wife in the house is Griha Lakshmi, and if they're, more pious and their mood is good, they're happy, then everything goes well. There's more prosperity in the house. Right? And who doesn't want more prosperity in the house? So the elder gopis think, this sounds good. We like it. Okay. So then they go to their daughters, and I mean, daughter-in-laws, and they tell them, today you need to go out and pick flowers and go worship the sun god and this and that. And all, and the girls are going, is this our mother-in-law? Who's this lady? Like that, because they've been, restricting this and that. And so then they go out and they're so happy, right? And then they go out, and of course Madhu Mangal's arranged all that. Now he goes and tells Krishna that they're going there to worship the sun god. So then he shows up there as a Brahmin. Because if you want to do the worship, you need a Brahmin there. Even if you're a Brahmin, still it's the temple Brahmin. He deals with the deity. It's his job, not yours. It's not that I come to the temple, I'm a Brahmin, so I just walk into the altar and start doing an arti. No, there's the local Brahmin, he does. So then he's there, and then there's the whole pastime where Radha and Krishna are there together doing the worship. And even, you have the, one manifestation of this, that Jatila is even there and thinking, oh, such a nice Brahmin we got for doing the puja and all this and that. And Madhu Mangal's there and overseeing kind of because he's the Brahmin. So he's kind of like I think in the local language here they call it dalal, which means the in-between, the middleman. It's like I know the Brahmin, you know me, so I'll connect you with the Brahmin, like this kind of thing, so he say, yeah, this Brahmin can do. Oh, okay, he's nice, he's been recommended by other Brahmins. So you can see is how much facility is given to the pastimes because of the Vedic rules. Right? And then if you're going to have parakeet and the girl can walk in and out of the house anytime she wants, dressed any way she wants, and interact with anybody she wants, where's the parakeet or ras? If you have a bunch of animals out in the yard, is that parakeet or ras? No, they're just a bunch of animals. Parakia means you're not supposed to be doing, and it's going on. So therefore, unless the Vedic has the rules that you're not supposed to do this, girls don't go out and do like that. They dress like this, they behave like this. Then you have Parakia Rasa. So without the Vedic system, you don't have the spiritual world, the pastimes of the spiritual world. You just don't have them. So all this thing, oh, we are not into that, we're not, then that means that there must be an underlying impersonalism there in that whole method, and a basis for distinction, adoration, and profit, or something to gain from the material world, because they're not willing to work in goodness, which means performing their duty. And at the same time, as sometimes they're talking, things that we know are ignorance, and some of the times they're trying to use the Vedic, but for their own benefit. So we're talking passion and ignorance here, like the local culture. So we're supposed to be absorbed in bhakti and transcend that local culture, but somehow or another, due to conditioning or attachment, people hold on to those things. And they do all this nonsense, not understanding the philosophy. So we can see as the spiritual world, then the whole Vedic system is very much part of it. In other words, what Krishna likes to do socially, that becomes established as Varnashram. Where else did it come from? Right? That's the whole point. It's just, Prabhupada and the Acharyas made it up just to harass Westerners or what?
No.
Yeah, so that's the whole thing, is that it's the reflection of the spiritual world. Use it properly and it's there. You don't use it, then it gets distorted. We have to remember is that, you don't want to function as a human, because human follows Varnashram. There's 8 million different species that don't follow. Right? And out of 400,000 that are human, most of them don't follow either. And so they're basically subhuman, human form of life, but they're not actually functioning very well in that. So, yeah, it means you can do, but don't claim it's human. Don't claim it's equal. Don't claim it's better. Just say, I'm attached to being an animal. It's like you see in the Bhagavatam, fifth canto, with the Kinaras and Kimpurushas, and it's going through all the different Varshas and who's their deities and that, and they're explaining all that, and they say that we're forest dwellers, we're a bit unsophisticated and all that. They worship the Lord, but they're half animal and they live in the forest, and so things aren't as refined as city life. Like Hanuman out in the forest had so much to do, but once he moved to the city in Ayodhya, he has nothing to do. Right? There's a whole pastime where Sita Devi has to find him something to do, or someone has to find something to do. I think it was someone else that he said, because everything's being done. There's so many servants, right? So they said, okay, there's one service that's not, someone's not doing. Every time Lord Ramachandra yawns, you snap your fingers in front of his mouth, right? I don't know if you've ever seen it. Indians, when they yawn, they snap their fingers or they cover their mouth.
Yes.
Right? Because when you open your mouth like that and yawn, then the subtle living entities from the antariksha, they can go inside. It's their right. So if you cover or snap, because snap, they don't like snaps. That's the only reason that probably all the jazz guys aren't dead, because they snap a lot. So the ghosts are right there, willing to take them over, but they can't because they keep snapping all the time. So whatever it is, so the snap, so therefore he got, okay, so he sat there next to the the asan, where Lord Ramachandra is there. And then the first time he starts to yawn, oh no, he wasn't sitting there. He was sitting up in one of the arches and stuff, up, because he's a monkey, he's sitting trees. So there's no trees, so he sits up on the building. And as soon as he jumps down and starts snapping. And because he's so enthusiastic, this is his only service, he just keeps snapping. And Ramachandra can't close his mouth. So then people are wondering, it keeps going on. This is a long yawn, then it keeps going. Then they get worried. They call the physicians and everything like that. And no one can find anything wrong, because, they can do the pulse and all this and that. And then I can't remember who pointed it out. And that is that the reason he can't stop yawning is that Krishna, you know, the Lord says that as you surrender, they reciprocate. So he's doing this service. He can't not accept the service. So he says, if you want him to close his mouth, you have to give Hanuman something else to do. So then Sita Devi gave him some other services. Right? So it's all based on all these things. You have to have a form. Because that's the thing, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions, you either follow religion or you'll create your own. You know, that's the whole thing. So you either follow the God-given laws and religious processes, you know, that come down to us through the acharyas, or we'll create your own. You know, and you see they're doing it, even though it makes no sense. You know, God made right in the Brahma Samhita, right? When it opens in the first verses, you know, because I think the prayers that we're used to, the Chintamani prayers, I think started with 29. So the first 28 verses are explaining the creation and Goloka and the structure of the cosmos and all these kind of things. So one of the things there is because Shiva and Parvati are the first, you know, are on that platform because Vishnu's, excuse me, gaze is there. And so he gazes at the material energy. So that part of the gaze that enters, that then becomes Shambhu, and the part that reflects is Sadashiva, right? So in other words, that the original principle, who's non-different than Vishnu, it's just Vishnu in the mode of I destroy, right? Because the Purushas are I'm the controller, I'm the maintainer, and I'm the destroyer, right? Well, in Vaikunthapati is his mood is I am God, right? And in Vrindavan, then Krishna's mood is I'm the son of Mother Yashoda, right? So there's a mood, there's an identity. So therefore, the feature of I am the destroyer, that is Sadashiva, and I am the creator, that is Hiranyagarbha. And then those features will be in the universe as Brahma and Shiva, and then he will expand as Paramatma, you know, Kiradakshaya Vishnu, to take care of, you know, the maintenance, right? So now that then in so doing, then the first living entities, and from them that all the other species and everything else come, is going to be Shiva and Parvati. So that means since they're male and female, and because of that they get offspring, therefore all living entities are divided into male and female. And that's the eternal law. But how is that going in modern society? They're thinking, no. You know, there's all these unlimited forms and this and that, though at the same time as whatever they say, there's only two kinds of gender, genitalia. Oh, but it doesn't matter about that. It's this and that. And, you know, I identify as a cardboard box, you know, like that. And so, you know, it's just insane. So that's the point, is they're making up their own religion. And you follow it, you're pious, and if you don't, then you're impious and deserve to be destroyed. You know, it's like before they used to burn witches at the stake, so now it's the same thing because of their new religion. You know, witches were against the Christian religion, so they burned them at the stake. And so these guys are against our new age religion, and so then, you know, they're fit to be destroyed.
Now
So it's
it's
the
just
whole
called
point is this,
canceling.
yeah, but that's the point is this. That canceling is the politically correct term, because they actually want to completely destroy your life, and they'll never stop doing it. It's not like cancel, okay, we don't care about him. You need a higher level of human just to do that. He doesn't know how to behave. We're not going to interact. But if he does behave nice, okay, then what's that? No, here it's that they have to take the envy and the hatred to the point of destruction. They have to keep going until, and if he pops up at any point, his name, oh, destroying like that. No, it's way more destructive than canceling. Canceling would be the same, like, I think farther down south in Europe, there was a little bit of a program there where they were, how you say, doing some purification within, I think, Bosnia, that only certain of a particular ethnicity would be there, And so they were cleansing, in other words, cleansing the place of any ethnicity other than that. Right? So cleansing is a good thing. So if I say ethnic cleansing, you talk about cleansing the ethnicity. Okay, nice. Okay, sounds great. But it meant they went and killed anybody that wasn't of an ethnicity that they wanted there. So same way when they say, canceling doesn't mean that, okay, I'm not going to think about him or talk about him. No, we have to destroy the person's life. Has no occupation, has no this and that. If they have a family, destroy that. If they have anything, keep destroying. And if they're sitting on the street and they're still sitting, why aren't they lying down? Then you have to harass them till they're there. And if they're lying down, why are they still breathing? So it's just, that's the point, is that it's the envy is to the utmost. So this religion, the envy, that's it allows the maximum amount of envy and hatred to be manifest. So you could say it's the lowest level of karma, because the fear in karma is envy and hatred, right? So they can't. So it gives rise, because other ones, okay, we don't like the guys, but we don't bother them. We don't have nothing to do with them, but we don't bother them. But this is no, I have a right that I can bother them no matter where they are and what situation, even situations you shouldn't bother, like somebody's having a wedding. It's supposed to be sacrosanct. No, we'll go in there and protest about something and mess everything up. And it doesn't matter, because our hatred and envy is so much more important than anybody else's life. And that's what you see going on. So it has, that's what I'm saying. Canceling is actually saying it as if it's a nice thing. It's like, I think it was the famous, let's see, I have it here. I'll just have to look for a second. Where is that? Yes, the famous thing. It sounds really good. I may not say it right, but Arbeit macht frei.
Arbeit macht frei.
Huh? Ar?
Arbeit macht frei.
Arbeit macht.
Arbeit
Arbeit frei.
macht frei.
Yes,
Labor freeze.
so it sounds good, right? It means that, this Arbeit means work, macht makes frei, free. So the work will make you free. But what they mean free means free from the body, you're dead. So that's the whole point, is that it's being that that's the whole point of this these kind of perspective. They make up their own religion. But the point is like that you can have 8 million, basically 400,000 kinds of religion. Because that's what it is. A cat does cat stuff. It doesn't do something else. That's its religion. Right? Dog does dog stuff. So that's the whole point, is that humans have their own religion. So therefore, that's why then you follow these things that situate you in goodness. And then by proper association with the devotees, you come from goodness to pure goodness. But the point is your situation is goodness. You're not trying to get to goodness. That's just where you situate yourself. You do things because that's what you're supposed to do. What you're trying to get yourself to is pure goodness. And even that, it's only because then from that platform, it's very easy to develop love for Krishna. Bhakti is not dependent upon that, So one can start to advance despite not being on that platform. I mean, Prabhupada, when he went to Tompkins Square Park, it's not that all those individuals that came around and were sitting there and listening or dancing were all in the mode of goodness. Right? They would have been in like ignorance and more ignorance and deep dark ignorance and absolute bottom of the well ignorance and all those kind of things. So bhakti is so powerful, it can act even though someone is on a lower platform, but it's recommended the higher, it's easier. Just like I can cook out in the backyard, I can cook out in the middle of the street if I really wanted to. Set up a bunch of bricks and a bunch of this and that so cars can't bump into me, and they're going to be honking, they're going to be driving by and yelling and screaming, and someone will come out and try to harass me, and probably someone will call the cops. But if I really want to do it, I can do it. You know, but it's recommended. Why not cook in your kitchen? Much easier. And if you have these kind of items in your kitchen, it's even easier again. So since everyone's looking to make their life easier, why not follow the recommendations of the Acharyas so that it makes it very easy to perform devotional service and go back to Godhead? But it's not about, for us, it's not about the Varnashram. It's about the Daiva. Daiva Varnashram means it's about Daiva. Varnashram engaged in the service of Daiva.
Exactly, that's my point, because in one sense, you know, if you're a Brahman in the spiritual world, you already have the mentality of sannyas, you know, as a Varna. So I
No, but
was thinking,
it's about pastime. It's about
yeah,
pastime.
exactly, I understand
Don't
that.
take it that far there. Utilize that thought here. How
Okay.
it's useful. Because it's how it's useful to move forward in Krishna consciousness, because sannyas means that you're doing everything for Krishna. So Prahlad
Exactly.
Maharaj at 3 years old was already sannyas, but we
Yeah.
know he grew up, got married and everything like that, became the king after his father and all that. So the point is the mentality is what you're trying to get to. The external form helps that,
Exactly.
right? In other
So
words, it
that was
helps you
why I
get there,
was
but in
thinking
Yeah, but in this,
you
but in
know,
the
knowing.
spiritual world, it's for pastimes,
Okay, thank you.
right? In other words, the spiritual world is already the pastimes are going on. The same things reflected here help you get to those pastimes, like that. And therefore, you're just in whatever's your relationship. So you don't have to be a sannyasi to be. Like, we see the gopis are the best.
Exactly. That was the doubt, actually, that you can be married and have the sannyas mentality, and everybody in the spiritual world basically have the sannyas mentality. So,
Yeah, but then what are you going to do if everybody is all the same? It's just like, okay, let us say this for example. You have those, someone can help me with this saying of this and that. There's, you get these, they're about this big, sometimes bigger, sometimes smaller. They're kind of like a wooden doll that's, you know, a cylindrical shape that's painted onto it the form of the doll, right? Then you, I think it's something like Matryoshka or something, you can open it and
Papuchka.
there's another one
Papuchka.
right, which one?
Papuchka.
Then when you open it, there's another one inside that and another one until it gets out, little dinky ones like this.
Matryoshka.
So, okay, Matryoshka. So you can do something with it. Now, what if I have all the ones are exactly the same? Right?
Wouldn't
Then it's limited what you can do.
Yeah.
Right? I can say, okay, this one's the king, and this one's the king, queen, and this one's the servant, but they all look the same. So what's the dude? I'm projecting that onto there. So why not have one look like the king, one look like the queen, one look like the servant? So that's the
Yes.
whole point, is that when you have pastimes, you need to have that variety and all the different things there. You know, the kids go out in the backyard and they become, you know, knights in shining armor, so they pick up a stick and they're going out and fighting the dragon, which is the bush in the backyard, right? You know, so you have all these things. So the point is here's the perfection of pastimes, is whatever, you know, Krishna, it all meant, and it's all there. So therefore, this is how Krishna likes to interact, because it's the best. You know, we never complain that, yeah. So if I tell a kid or tell anybody, yeah, in the general society, there's going to be people who are more intellectual and all that, you know, like teachers or stuff like that. There's going to be people who kind of organize everything. There's going to be people that are really good at, you know, figuring out how, you know, to make money and somehow or another improve the prosperity. And another group, then they help everyone else. No one will say no. Nor if I say it's okay, yeah, these two people, you know, the kids. Kids never ask, you know, okay, who's that? And you go, oh, that's this kid's parents. They never go, what are parents? Well, this one's the mother and that one's father. What are mother? What are never. Because it's inherent. So that's the whole idea, is that these, it's so perfect that everybody naturally goes with it. It's the inherent thing. Kids will naturally go with that. You can train them into something else. by association. But naturally, it's like everything is personal, right? They have a doll. The most important thing about kids' dolls is they have big eyes, and the eyes are nice, look friendly. Even if there's not much of a shape, they can just have a head, little dinky body, but as long as there's nice eyes that are smiling and that they're happy. Right? So because it's personal, they grow up, they learn to become impersonal. They have faith in family and parents and friends, and they can grow up and lose that. So they don't have a problem with these things. So that's the point, is Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's concept is perfect. And so it doesn't need any improvement. And it's so perfect that even it's used in the material world, it's still it's something, one, the living entity can relate to, and two is that it can elevate them up to the point where they can take part in the pastimes. It's so perfect. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, see. Ashwaji.
Hare Krishna Maharaj,
And
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
Came in my mind because I've been studying these common law and following these all conspiracy theories like this. So it seems to be that the English language, what they have done, they've been, how to say it, they have been switching. And when you say it, cancel, came in my mind immediately a word like council. Like, sorry. So there was like you have counselors and you have all these things. So they've been pretty good doing all these things that they are making like council. So I mean, they have this very, I mean, they have even this black dictionary or whatever. So maybe you can expand a little bit with this and sutra languages.
It's just a matter of see is that you have what is the the absolute position. And then you have what I want. In other words, the absolute position means I'm not the center. Right? I have to take part because the absolute means it's already reality. It's already fact. And so then but if reality is what people feel, so that was the difference, is that you had amongst the Ionians, they came up with this idea of relativity, where if the majority of people say something is true, it becomes truth. And something that before was true now becomes the lie. So Socrates, his whole point was that, no, there's an absolute truth. We have to stick to that. We have to bring ourselves in line with the absolute truth. So this Ionian, philosophy didn't appreciate this. Hence, he ended up drinking the hemlock. Right? In other words, those that were thinking on this relative position, they got rid of him. So they were all the, doctors and lawyers and politicians and all those, all the professionals. In other words, professionals are famous for getting rid of, how you say, the concept of that there's an absolute truth, because then they can't do just whatever they like. That's the point. That's the Vedic. Is since there's an absolute truth, you have to do your duty. So it situates you in goodness. But if you want to do whatever you like for your benefit, immediately that's passion. If, as long as you're following the Vedic. But when you go against that, that moves it into ignorance. So we see is that thing is that they're trying to get rid of this concept of absolute truth. In fact, when I was a kid, in school, they taught that Socrates was the father of Western philosophy, right? And then, that's how it did. But then I think around the 90s, I started hearing devotees say when they went to school, then Plato was the father of Western philosophy, right? Then just some years ago, maybe like, I don't know, like 10 years ago or something, then now it's Aristotle is the father of Western philosophy. And they say they're not even sure that Socrates was a real person. The theory is that he was just a figure in the teachings of Plato, just to give a, you know, to give a nice, you know, like a, you tell a narrative story, then it works much nicer. That he didn't even exist, because if he doesn't exist, then the concept that there's an absolute truth doesn't exist. While Aristotle was, as truth means what you can see here, right? You know, that's real. So, you know, therefore they've adjusted. So you can see is that the natural tendency is that to go away from this concept. So that's why then all these things come up, is so that people have the freedom to do whatever they like that they feel is going to be best for getting what I want. You know, it's like you have, let's say, on the climate, right?
American One Constitution? Huh? U.S. Constitution, maybe? Enjoy? That's the goal of the
that's
life?
There. Yeah, that's there. But, you know, I mean, it's there. It's even on the Coke bottle. Enjoy, right? You know, so that's why it's so popular, right? So the whole thing is anything that's not actually in line with Krishna consciousness, you know, that's come up with something else, then is going to be based on these points of passion and ignorance. That's just the way it is, you know. But anything that does work, it's because that's actually Vedic, you know, by accident or by observation, they see it, but they're not necessarily doing it because it is Vedic. They'll claim it's Western. You know, does that make sense? You know, like that. So that kind of thing is there. But my point is that when there's an absolute truth, you don't have the room for speculation becomes greatly reduced. You know, it makes it much more workable, that there's a more common culture, there's more common everything, and people can work more nicely together. And as soon as you remove that, then you're going to come up with all the different, how many species of life is there, that's how many philosophies you'll get. You know, it's like, what do you call it? Just a joke on that aphorism by the, what do you call it? You know, that foolish Pujari in Calcutta. You know, as many species, as many philosophies. You understand the reference? You know, as many, you know, individuals, as that many philosophies, you know, that many paths. The Bengali jato mat tato pat. How many groups there are, that many mats, their paths there are, and everything like that. So it's the same old, it's all impersonalism. Impersonalism gives shelter to any kind of philosophy, because the advantage of it is you reduce everyone down to an identity. There's no individuality. As soon as there are just this identity, then it's this identity against that. This one's good, that one's bad. And so then you, that's any of these things that you see, what it has, it's all based on identities. Right? Is that okay? Okay, very good. Tatvaji.
Hi, Maharaj. Thank you. Would like to still ask, well, related what you said about the crazies and the craziness and this aspas cancellous thing, you know, that what are sastras saying about kind of persons who, at least I have difficulty to fit to any of the Vedic categories, who are envy, who are destructible in our movement, but they are somehow or other in our movement. Because I remember last discussion I had with Suhotra Maharaj, he was warning about this thing quite strongly. He said what Prabhupada said, this movement can't be destroyed outside, only inside. So one sense for our one own comfortability, you know, let them go wherever they like. But at the same time, they are purposefully destroying ISKCON in the name of something, whatever. No, it's not our, you know, based on our philosophy, nothing like that. So, well, don't give a lecture, but what are sastras saying about dealing with this, how would I say, outside, or at least my definition frame of any Vedic categories of persons inside our own movement?
Yeah, well, the Manu talks about it. Then he mentions about that there's two kinds of Brahmins you have to be very careful of, or just people in general, but whatever it is, I think he's giving the, in the context of the Brahmins. That Brahmin who acts like a cat and that Brahmin who acts like a crane. Right? Crane is that, you know, kind of water bird with the very long legs and long neck. It sits next to the water. So we've heard the examples of the crane. You know how the crane, they're mentioned as like the sadhus, you know, like that. They stand in the water and perfectly still, like great yogis, unaffected by anything going on around them. But all they're doing is waiting for the fish to get close. They don't move so the fish doesn't get scared. And as soon as the fish gets close enough, immediately whoosh, they grab the fish. So, you know, the position of sadhu is there until they can get what they want. In other words, they'll be nice. They'll interact nicely with you. They'll do all these things to get you to trust them and deal properly with, you know, deal the way they like. And as soon as they get to that point, they take advantage and destroy you. So that's the brain. The cat, I can't remember the details, because there's details of all the qualities, but it's been a long time. But the cat, then it's also, then they, no, that's another thing. Yeah, the cat, I'm not sure. But it's another thing where they present themselves in one way, but they're doing something else. So, you know, so that's their Manu mentions that can come up. So, that, you know, you have somebody who's pious enough, they like in certain elements of the lifestyle, the environment and all that, but at the same time as they, you know, want to get their own benefits out of it, you know, like that. Or you could, yeah, that would be the, so you always, that can come up. See, is that you have, is that in the early days, people weren't trained enough or experienced enough in Krishna consciousness. If their consciousness dropped, they just went outside. Right? But now people have been around for long enough that they're accustomed to working within Krishna consciousness. So even if the consciousness drops, the tendency will be to stay inside and try to act in such a way that they can get what they want that they normally would get outside, inside. So it just shows the development of the movement, the maturity of that, or the power of the movement, that in such a short time, you know, that all these different things could develop, because on the material platform, this would take centuries. But devotional service is so powerful, you know, that bhakti is the abhideya. So therefore, even they want to do nonsense, still it's the power behind everything. You know, anything you want to do, you have to devote yourself. So you see, those that devote themselves the most to these, you know, modern political, social, economic kind of ideologies, then they're the ones that get the most because of their devotion to it. They're very committed to this ideology. And so therefore they get the positions, they get the authority, they get the facilities and those kind of things from their devotion. So they're thinking about these things 24 hours a day. And so Krishna's reciprocating and giving, but they're not getting the spiritual. That will come if they're chanting nicely or associating nicely or honoring prasad, you know, or taking darshan of the deity. So from that they'll be getting, but from these other aspects, you know, then they're developing that. So problem is it's going in two different directions. It's like having a foot on two different boats. At some point, you either have to get on one boat or the other or fall in the water. You know, so it's just a matter of time. We'll see. It's not recommended, so it won't last. But it doesn't mean that they won't create trouble in the meantime. Because as, you know, it was said there, Prabhupada said, from outside, you can't destroy it, only from inside. But the point is, the sense of Lord Chaitanya's mission, it will go on. It may be all the nice advancement is there, you reset it, and then it'll start again, but it will go. So Prabhupada says his books will be the books for the next 10,000 years, means that's the way it's going to be. So if we want it, so Prabhupada also said that the movement will go on. It's just who gets the credit. So you take part, you know, properly, then you move forward with it. And if you don't, then you'll be moved to the side. At one point, it will come. Suddenly, all these things will just be pushed on the side. But, you know, it's their time now. It's the time factor. So time factor allows things to, you know, change and all that, and then it switches. Like, you know, generally speaking, most all the time, Indra and the demigods are in the heavenly planets. But now and again, the demons come up and take over. So Prabhupada explains that as the time factor. And, you know, you can't do anything about that. It's just the way it is. So when the time changes, then you stay out of the way. And then when it changes back, you can do something. So it's one thing is if there's something you can do and it'll get a good effect, you do that. But if it doesn't matter what you do, it'll give a bad effect, why do something? Just sit back, because it means the time factor is there. You can't do anything. Right? So that's the way it is. It's you know, you can say, well, that's not right. And yeah, no, it's not right. But at the same time, as people have their desires and karma, and Krishna reciprocates with them, and somebody wants to do these things, then they get the opportunity. But they'll also get the credit for having done all that nonsense. You know, so it's not going to give them devotional benefit. And you know, you don't want to make it harder. At the time of death, you want to remember Krishna, so you don't want other things in the way. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I think Swat Maharaj, thank you, Maharaj, already makes sense, but maybe comment or something. I think he mentioned that, I mean, for me, it seems to be that movement of the greater ISKCON goes very freshly and nicely when one goes to preaching. Such a nice reciprocation, you know, like, let's say, in that office I'm staying with the, you know, mayors and all that, you know, there's so much fresh, you know, questions and like that. But somehow or other, this, you know, how would I say, these official centers here in certain Western side of this movement are getting what Swatramas had much more heavier definition I would make now, but they have found from the one book which he wrote is you know, 13 different, you know, deviated sects, you know. He kind of said that it can even go and spread, you know, up to the GBC level. So for me, it seems to be that movement is going very freshly and nicely on, but the organized so-called official representatives are getting quite ill in many places, to be frank.
Yeah, it means that's the point, is that the jiva has, you know, that independence, or that freedom of choice at every moment. And so if people aren't careful, then they can get distracted. And then by being distracted, they can go off, and they don't even know. Because Maya's potency, there's two main potencies, right? The covering and the throwing. So first you have to be covered. So then when you're thrown, you don't notice it. Just like the living entity, he's human until he's covered. Then when he's thrown into the pig's body, he won't notice. He'll think it's great, right? Pigs think being a pig is fabulous. But if he's human and it hasn't been covered and you just put him into a pig's body, he'll be very disturbed. So the point is first there's covering, and then it starts to go down and they don't even notice. So that's the whole point. That's why one keeps, you know, good association, you know, founds everything in Prabhupada's books. And you know, that makes everything go very nicely. But otherwise, then one gets distracted and one doesn't even know it. That's the whole point. That's how it works. Is that you get so used to it, you don't even notice. You know, it's like you live in the city, you think the city is pretty normal. But if you go out in the country, it's so quiet and, you know, all the natural sounds that it's like, wow, this is so different. Because you've just gotten used to the city. So when you drive back into the city, then you go, wow, this place is noisy and all that. But then you get engaged in whatever you're doing and the covering comes again. So that's, what he was pointing out is that, yeah, it means, and the point is anybody can get distracted. That's the whole point. So that's why, and Prabhupada's pointing out that one should always be vigilant to see that Maya is not making any, sneaking in any way. If he sneaks in, then you see her, like that. And then like that, because she's just here to test. She's not here to overwhelm, unless there's an opening, right? The whole point is she's just testing that only those who are fully focused on Krishna, then they're going to get, be freed from her entanglement. Right? Because otherwise, if there's an interest in Maya, then she keeps you busy in the cycles, how it moves. It's already, nice patterns are there. It's just like they, up to now, they always thought chaos was completely just, insane, no pattern. But then with the supercomputers, they were able to put in the data and map how chaos worked. And it's a mathematical formula. So in the same way as everyone will move through all these modes and 8,400,000, but there's set methods how you go through. There may be seeming unlimited ways, but they still move in certain patterns. And you have choices and you move here and there. Because it doesn't matter. You're here for as long as you don't wake up to Krishna consciousness. So you can spend, unlimited lifetimes. So that way you get all the different variety in this and that. And if it's not exactly correct in this universe for what you need, they'll send the material nature will take you to the next universe. Right? So if there's an exact situation needed, for your karma, it's not in this universe, Maya will take that soul to the universe that you can find it in. And then you'll be there. So that's why Brahmanda Brahmite Kono Bhagyavan Jeev means, and the living entity moving from one universe to another, Guru Krishna Prashadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. So that by the mercy of Krishna the Guru, you get the seed. Then you start growing the plant of the creeper of bhakti. Is that okay? So the point is that it happens, like Prabhupada was saying, don't be surprised who leaves, be surprised who stays. So in this case, that they've technically maybe in consciousness have left on certain levels, but they're still physically around. But the point is don't be surprised that people get distracted or bewildered by Maya. Be surprised at who's actually being nicely situated. Because for the conditioned soul, that's not standard. To be materialistic, that's standard in the material world. Right? So that the living entity actually is committed to Krishna consciousness and sticking to it, that's special. So look at that, and that becomes inspiring. Back in Vrindavan. Yeah. So that becomes inspiring. So that's what we do. And you be careful. You're not foolish. You're careful of bad association like that. So careful of that, But you know, it's just like it walking through the city. You walk down the streets that you know are good and avoid those ones that are a problem. So you stick to the good streets, things will go all right. You walk down the bad streets and there can be problems. So it's just, there's like that, then you just avoid that association or only deal in that association in certain things. You only deal with, some practical service of this or that or something else and don't go beyond that. In other words, don't open Pandora's box by asking about an issue. You just avoid that. Okay, you want this printed. How many copies? 10. Okay. Give me 10, 5 minutes. That's it. Your conversation is done. And just do that. Just stick to your service. So those areas where there is, like chanting japa in the morning, generally everybody's pretty good. Like that. Or a few other things. Morning program generally goes well. It's basically from breakfast until next Mangalarti that your problem is. But from Mangalartik until breakfast, generally it's fairly solid. So that's the point. Bhakti being so powerful, they're able to stay in the movement because of their commitment to that, even though the other, 21 hour or, 20 hours is maybe a bit of a roller coaster ride. Is that okay?
Thank you very much. Narakriti has one question.
Yeah, Narakriti G.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Please accept my humble obeisances. It's just stated that the Srimad Bhagavatam is as brilliant as the sun and illuminates everything. So it also illuminates that part of the nature which refers to the material world also. So I cannot still put together again and again the situation when if somebody is Krishna conscious, that at the same time he's inclined towards the principles and ideas and philosophies which are completely opposed to Krishna consciousness. In other words, if really once somebody chants the holy name and reads Bhagavatam and is enlightened within, then he manifests the symptoms which are described in the Vedas, like Narada Muni when he was serving the saints, and he completely changed his view of the world also. But if my view of the world is still conditioned to my birth and what I see and watch on TV or YouTube, that doesn't sound very solid position in Krishna consciousness. I have a difficulty accepting that somebody is following and has a good sadhana, and at the same time he's propagating the mundane principles of either management or philosophy or anything else, and at the same time occupying the and really being eager to be in a leadership position, which obviously not qualified to have. So I don't believe these persons are either chanting or following anything. That's my conditioning. Because if you do this, really, then Krishna consciousness enlightens everything. And you can see your illusion position. Are in situation, you can see yourself also in this relative terms also. You're not stepping into situations which are hurting to others. That's another point, that's really what was mentioned here is a witch hunt, which gives a society's position that once somebody wants to hunt somebody else, and put him down just because you can, because he is weaker, and then you feel like happiness and strength in that. I don't believe these persons have anything to do with Krishna consciousness. So please dispel my doubt, and this understanding.
Okay. Well, one advantage that's there is that whatever is done in what do you call it? Anything in Vrindavan, you get 1,000 times the benefit, right? So being in Vrindavan now, as from what we can see, then you can get so much benefit by, understanding this point. See, is that the living entity is an individual, and as Krishna is an individual, the living entity is an individual. Because since he's an individual, what expands from him will be individual, right? Because he's Satchitananda, we're Satchitananda. Just he's unlimited Satchitananda, and we're 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. Satchitananda. And so that point of independence is always there, and you can apply that to different areas. So being a individual, being a personality, see, is as an identity, then there's only one category. But as an individual, then there's so many elements that are there, right? So, you know, just like, let's say, you know, people have different interests and all that, and it'll be rare to find someone who all of their interests are the same. You know, someone might be into sports, another person's not, you know, even though they might be friends, but there's something else that's common. In other words, there's some common ground for them. You know, they let's say, both are into their cars, but someone else is, one is into sports, one's not, or one's into music, one's not, or one's into this kind of music, but not that kind of music. And the combination is there is going to be always unique. That gives the individuality. As an identity, then they're just one block, right? So the important thing here to be able to appreciate this is when we're talking about, you know, things that are right and wrong, we're talking about what are the rules, what are the duties and all that. So we're talking about the identity of it. But who's going to follow that is the individual. So what you have is, you know, just here is an individual who has somehow or another been convinced by Prabhupada's grace about the importance of chanting the holy name or taking prasad or a few points that they could relate to. And they're steady in that. You probably see what they're doing now in that area is the same as 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It's been the same. So whatever impressed them in the very beginning, those aspects they're still doing most likely today. But now areas that they weren't impressed on, they may carry on in the same mentality that they had before they came to Krishna consciousness. You know, it's just they're doing whatever they're doing outside. Then they come in contact with, you know, Prabhupada and the devotees. And at the time, especially, you know, if you go back in time, that, you know, temple life meant you just had the temple program, you had book distribution, maybe some cleaning and a few services around the temple. That was it. There wasn't anything outside of that. Temple president didn't need to be a big manager because they had 15 people. Everyone did just what they're supposed to do. You told them to do it, they did it. No arguing, nothing that, you know, like that. Did you ever meet Makanlal? I think he became a Maharaj. No? No, met. I think he was more in America. Very, very pleasant person. Very idealistic person. But he moved up, he became a sannyasi and, you know, one of the big preachers in some area of the world and like that. I think he left now just a few years back. So he wouldn't be what you'd call a great manager, but he ran our temple. He had a nice temple commander that actually could manage and it all went on nicely. So it didn't need much. There was no politics. There was no this and that. So you just become fixed in those things. And then as time goes and you start introducing things, like we said, you know, you introduce them. It means all these things were bubbling in the background, but Prabhupada keep them from coming up, right? And many senior devotees also trained by Prabhupada wouldn't let them come up. But then in the 80s, then it comes up about, you know, the academic view, the inductive academic view and the you know, postmodern kind of political viewpoints, you know, about we're all equal and equity and fraternity, liberty, all these kind of things were introduced, you know, subtly in the 80s by getting rid of all the big gurus and everything like that. And so then if you could get rid of that, then what's the meaning of any authority? So they reduce, there's no authority. Now anyone can be an authority at the same time as they have to claim they're the authority because no one believes them. No one cares, right? So then, you know, there, and then you bring in the professionalism and all that, which Prabhupada was also, no centralization, no bureaucracy, no central, you know, all this kind of thing. And that they brought that in the 90s, you know, and then you come along and then political correctness came in and then you give, the knots, then you bring in some more modern political, kind of social economic kind of things. But these are the things that they thought before they joined, right? That's the thing. Otherwise, how is it you can be 70 years old and still be thinking like people in the 60s? You know, it's just that as these come up, that was their conditioning. But they were convinced by the chanting and all that. That's why I said about the morning program. Now, in your life, is the morning program is only like, 4 or 5 hours long, right? And so that in time is not so much. Now, by power, it's the greatest. But now, what are you thinking about all day from 9 o'clock until next morning 4? You know, that's going to be 20 hours. That takes up the most of their thought and their focus. So that's why you see is by habit, they can do those because they were convinced and that's why they're doing. So you see they're doing, they are chanting, they are this and that. Of course, you can get into the quality or this or that or stuff like that. But the point is that's how they can have this kind of Jekyll and Hyde kind of element, is that on one side, they're convinced of Krishna consciousness as in as much as what is applied in the morning program. But then they'll have a completely different outlook that may have varying degrees of usefulness or opposition to the devotional thought from 9 o'clock to 4 in the morning. You know, so that's the thing, is that independence of the living entity and allowing them, if they, you want to be involved in Krishna only this much, then Krishna will allow that. You want to be involved more, then of course that's what's recommended. He's always going to give that preference first, as a priority. But if you want these other, you get. You know, I mean, it's like, look, what are the demigods? Demigods are all neophyte devotees. If they're a position holder as a demigod, they're devotees. Like Prabhupada said, you practice Krishna consciousness, but you have material desire. When you leave the body, you go to the heavenly planets. Like that. You can't be the demigods unless you're a devotee of Krishna. But now and again, do we see Indra not get a little bit off track? Right, he gets he's famous for getting way off track, but then he gets back on track if the right situation comes. But where's that situation? Means what was his situation? Everything he does doesn't work. He has no control, no power, no authority. He sends his worst clouds. He sends everything in and nothing. And Govardhan Hill, this little 7-year-old kid's holding up this hill on his left pinky. Because in the Vedic, you do something with your right hand means you have respect for it. You do something with your left means you're not respecting it. Like when Bhima is coming along on the path to go to Gandamandana Mountain to collect the lotus flower for Draupadi, he comes across this big monster monkey. He doesn't know who he is. And his tail's across the path. And because, he's trained, you don't step over someone else's body. But the tail goes all the way. It's a huge tail. He's not going to walk all the way around. Monkey can move his tail. The monkey said, I'm too old. You can move it for me, then that's fine. So he uses his left hand to grab the tail. But he can't pick it up. And then he uses both hands. And then he's strong as 10,000 elephants. And he can't even budge it. It's not even that there's some movement, not nothing. So then he goes, okay, who are you? Then he finds out he's Hanuman, he's his brother, and this and that, and they have a great time. But my point is the left hand. So Krishna is holding it up with his left hand. And of the left hand, then only one finger. And of one finger, the little finger. How much of an insult? This little kid using one little finger is defeating Indra with all the power that he can manifest. In other words, he can't manifest any more power than that. And then he's defeated. And this goes on not only just for a moment, or 7 days. And then he figures out, okay, something's wrong here. So at some point, Krishna is going to put the pressure, and then they'll have to surrender. And then they'll have that choice. Do they surrender to Krishna, or do they get upset and, put off continuing Krishna consciousness till a later time? So that's the point, is that the living entity always has a choice at every moment. So that's what you're going to find. It's not ideal. That's why the Vedic system is given. That's why the Varnashram and all these different, you know, the culture and all that's given, that there's a way to do things. We don't go against that because it's in line with what they do in the spiritual world, and it's supportive. At least, you know, if you're not on the platform of pure goodness, what happens? You fall back to goodness. And then you pick yourself up, get back to pure goodness. But if you in pure goodness and then fall down to the mode of ignorance, it's not as easy to get back up. So that's why it's not recommended. Though, you know, being misinformed or uneducated, untrained in these areas, therefore they avoid this. Like you see those who are trained personally by Prabhupada, even today, they only talk about those things that Prabhupada did back in the 60s and 70s. Anything beyond that, it doesn't make any sense to them. Right? But it's just always whatever Prabhupada did, that's what they'll do. Because they were convinced of that. So what he did all day, because they were with him, they saw Prabhupada, you know, organizing things and managing and this and that, while all these others who are going off the rails now, they weren't on that level. It's not like, okay, the big guys who were trained by Prabhupada went and the number two took over. These guys are like 3, 4, 5, 10. So they never saw that stuff. They were not involved at that time in these things. They became involved later. So they have no experience on how Prabhupada would run things and that. That's why they're supposed to gain from these people that were and read the books. But somehow or another, there's no, that access is not happening. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I think I'm really like comparing things from my perspective, personal one. So I have to acknowledge that there are different persons and different combination of modes, so they can do it. Yeah. And I just, on the top of my head, I thought like in India, in Guruvayur, you have these impersonalists. I mean, they have better sadhana than we could do, you know, for generations. But they can be at the same time very hateful of devotees, you know, and envious anything, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And but still they go and do their pujas and they
because
are hateful.
That's the weakness
still
of goodness. That's why goodness still has the problem. Karma, the fear, you know, when it says that by bhakti you remove fear, the devotee is fearless. So the fear comes in two features. The impersonal feature, you know, where you remove Krishna's loneliness. And with karma, it's envy and hatred. So because they're karma kandis, like that, means they're worshiping the deity. They're impersonalists. They're worshiping the deity. Because Guru Vayur, the worship there was established by Shankaracharya. Right? And so in it, it's very interesting. He has, you know, Gita Govinda being sung to the deities and all these nice festivals. So he's somehow or another engaged these hardcore Mayavadis in worshiping the deity very nicely. And so somehow or another, because it's Vaishnav thing, then if they get the association of Vaishnavs, they can adjust. I remember Atmatattva was talking with one of the main pujaris there, you know, or one of the main kind of people in that community. And, you know, they were having discussions and he started appreciating Krishna consciousness and what was going on and Lord Chaitanya and Prabhupada. And so then Amitattva asked him, so then, you know, what about taking up the practice? And he says, you don't understand. Once you get into this, you know, Mayavad, it'll take you millions of lifetimes to get out. You know, so he was not confident he could get out at all, you know, and not at this point. That's the whole beauty. He's not understanding the full power of bhakti, that bhakti can take you out. So when you see someone like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, just in that short time, transform into a serious Vaishnava that didn't even like to hear the word, you know, Mukunda, because it had the word mukti in it, you know, then that is the power of the holy name. Because otherwise, like that Mayavadi said, you're talking millions of lifetimes. You get into like you're in karma, it'll take you millions of lifetimes to get the gyan. You're into gyan, it'll take you millions of lifetimes to get out of that. So the power of bhakti is so special that it can overwhelm all these different things. So the only reason you see is that with this mentality and how they're dealing is because of that they, you know, chanting and these kind of things. So they'll see is, yes, this is proper, this is good. But then outside of that, how they apply their, in other words, their philosophy, basic philosophy is all right. But when it comes to religion, no. So, but you see with those Brahmins and Guru Vayur, their religion is, you know, solid as a rock, but their philosophy is useless. So that's why Prabhupada said you have to have both. Because that's why he said, if you have philosophy without religion, you get mental speculation. Isn't that what's going on? It's speculative. What's correct? What's not? Anything could be. Everyone, because there's no religion. And with them, there's religion, but when it comes to the philosophy, it's just sentiment that they're doing. You know, like that. And somehow or another, they're committed and attached, but somehow it's a very interesting thing how Guru Vayur has them. They're all attached to him, but at the same time, they're impersonal. It's like a fire started in the temple. And, you know, big fire, something, I don't know, it was a very serious thing. And I think it was the head Bajari came running in, grabbed Guru Vayur and ran out with him. Just picked him up and ran out. But if you understand Pancharatrik deity installations, the deity is cemented into place. And Guru Vayur is not a small deity. He just picked him up and ran off with him, took him home. Right. So the Lord reciprocates to that much that they put in. But at the same time, it's because they're still attached to their Mayavad philosophy, it doesn't change. So that's why it mentions that the most key thing in devotional service advancing is the association of Vaishnavas. You know, and associate with those like-minded and who are more advanced than yourself. That's what one has to do. Because otherwise, yeah, you can go on and get stuck in a particular aspect for lifetimes. You know, but devotional service never goes away. So that will remain, depending upon, if it was a mad elephant offense, means they won't be able to take advantage of it now for who knows how many lifetimes. You know, you're talking a lot of lifetimes. You know, but then it will start up where it left off. Otherwise, how do you get these crazy hippies down there that have no idea of anything, and then Prabhupada comes along and bang, there they are, and they're like doing the most amazing things because they're just continuing where they left off. And who knows how many lifetimes it was before, since they've been doing devotional service. So bhakti is in that way mysterious, in that it's so independent and unique. That is power. You can't actually, you know, describe it fully, right? And so that's the specialness that Prabhupada gave and what he brought. And so people are just saying he's the founder of Charya, means he started an institution. Whoopee! It's kind of like, you know, I mean, it's like every Tom, Dick, and Harry is starting an institution. And that's the only reason they call him founder of Charya. And that's why you see so many times founder acharyas in small letters, right? A noun has to be in a position. Like if I say the president of America, I have to put a capital P. The founder acharya is a position, like Ramanuja, Madhva, Nimbarka, and Vishnu Swami. It should be in capital founder and capital acharya. Or if they want to do the Sanskrit and put the dash and put as the second as, that's fine. But if they're going to do it in English with two separate words, then they got that capital because they don't understand what the founder acharya means. So he's important. He started the society. Yeah, but you know, it has to adjust with the time. So we change it. No, he's the founder acharya means the whole sampradaya, you know, is centered on him and his instructions and how that works. So you want to understand what the six Goswamis say. You have to understand it by listening to what the founder acharya says. You want to know what Bhagavatam or Gita said, you have to see it through what the founder acharya gives. That's not understood. And therefore, then they don't have a solid base. You know, but what to do? You know, everybody's independent and they can take it as far as they like. But the problem is in between, you can give other people a lot of trouble, you know, in the meantime. But at the same time, as we get our trouble, why we get our trouble, something from previous, you know, time or some action. And so we're getting trouble. And normally it should come from outside, from the karmis, but, you know, because they're willing to do it, then it comes from them. But actually, you know, it shouldn't. So my point is that there's a proper understanding or proper commitment. Maybe it's not a proper understanding, but at least a proper commitment to, you know, or devotion to the morning program, then that's good. But from 9 o'clock to Mangal Arati, that they're completely distracted, that's not good. So by saying they're individuals, and that doesn't mean that what's going on is good, but we're just trying to point out is what you do good, you get good results for, and what you do bad, you get bad results. Let's say the guy goes to work and he works nicely, he gets the benefits of that. But at the same time, he smokes like a smokestack, you know, he gets lung cancer. You know, so then that's the thing. How could he's such a nice worker? How could he die from cancer because he smoked? So you do two things at once, you know. Does that make sense? You know, so
thank you.
You get
thank
the
you.
Results
you,
of both things. In other words, they'll get the results of both. But at the same time, is because these what they're doing the others is it will start to eclipse. And it will start to get less and less. So unless somehow or another they snap out of it, at some point, you know, it might get completely eclipsed. It won't go away. It just means eclipse. Just like Prabhupada said, you do 50%, you know, and then you stop. Then when you start again, you'll start at 51. But the point is when will you start from 51? If it's just you went this life and you got the 51, then generally it means next lifetime. But if you've gotten up to whatever you've gotten and you create trouble for everyone and make everyone's life miserable, then it might not be so quick, or the position might not be so ideal. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Mara.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Raghunathji.
Maharaj, I only want to react a little more at this point. I think that it's very easy to understand the individuality of all the devotees and these things. I think that the problem is based only in the case because if somebody is in the position of guru or, I don't know, GPC, who is generally leading the many devotees, I think this is the problem because, for example, when you are reading Srimad Bhagavatam or listening Prabhupada's lecture, Prabhupada is clearly defined the position of the guru. And it's understandable that a devotee is present, that he has some mentality or things like this. But the definition of guru is something what is non-changing, you know. Then maybe this devotee is not continue in this position. They can stay like the devotees in the ISKCON. They can arrange all the their life in the way which they like, but it's very difficult to acceptable that they are in some position which is defined, and this definition is not going together with their life, you know.
Yeah, yes. No, it's definitely, that's why these positions are defined. So in other words, what's defined is the identity, that this is what they do. But they as an individual then, you know, should be trying their best to function at that kind of level, that platform. You know, so you're always going to have some individual elements. Like you see Chandrapuri, then he was, you know, senior to Lord Chaitanya because he was the godbrother of his guru. And so then, you know, he would, you know, nicely do his sannyas duties and all that. But he tended to be a Mayavadi, and he was too overwhelmed by the rules, you know, so that he criticized Lord Chaitanya that there were ants in his room, so he must be eating sugar candy. And Lord Chaitanya's, you know, he didn't say anything, but after he left, his comment was, there's ants everywhere. You know, that's the point of the planet. There's ants everywhere. So, and you see that, you know, the etiquette was there. They dealt nicely and all that. And then when, you know, as a sannyasi, it was time to leave, he left. Then I think from what I understand, maybe in Chaitanya Bhagavat, the devotees had a huge kirtan and feast. You know, because finally, now they could feed Lord Chaitanya nicely, they could deal nicely, because he was very critical on the food part. You know, he wasn't bothering them about the kirtan or this or that. His thing was just certain strictness in the lifestyle and food and all that kind of stuff. You know, he would criticize, and devotees felt restricted. They couldn't serve it nicely. So, you know, he was just attached to those particular rules. And so it's there, the etiquette's there. That's why etiquette is there, you know. And so then it's dealt, and then you'll see what time Krishna will move them on. They'll either correct themselves or they'll move on. So you can see his by position, the identity, so many things he may have fulfilled, but certain things he didn't. So it's not, so what's being mentioned is these are the ideals. That's why you have to stick to the principle is the main thing. You know, is that the guru, he has that faith in Krishna consciousness, and he can give that to you. I mean, so he has faith in Prabhupada's instructions, so then he can inspire you to follow them. So as long as he's a little ahead of you, it'll work. You know, just like it explained, that Uttamadikari Guru is going to be the best, because then he can bring you nicely to that level. You know, Madhyama is also quite solid. Neophyte's not quite as good, because he can only take you as far as he is. So as long as he's going, then you can go. And when he stops, then you get, you know, bump into him. Hopefully when you bump into him, you kind of give him a push and he starts moving forward again. So the idea is you know, these things can be there. So by the standard definitions, a neophyte wouldn't actually qualify to be a guru. But certain principle things are there, and then they're doing. Because for a neophyte, they do know more, their practices more and all of that. So on that lowest level, they can function as that. But it's not ideal. So as long as they're staying within the standard, you know, culture and etiquette and philosophy, then it works, though they may get distracted by so many other things. But when we start pushing, going against these things, that's where it starts to become very difficult. That's where it becomes difficult. So that, therefore, then, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, then you find those devotees that you can be inspired by and associate with them, right? That's all. You just find where it's working. You know, you don't have to, how you say, the finding of fault is not going to move you forward. It's finding what's going to be inspiring that moves you forward. Now, knowing what's right and wrong and being able to define that for yourself so you do what's right and avoid what's wrong, that's all right. Or someone else who doesn't know and you teach them so that they don't get distracted, that's all right. But just to you know, that one is inspired to do this because that's wrong, that's not enough. You have to, Krishna consciousness should be because that's what's correct. You chant because that's the thing to chant. You it's not that you chant because not chanting is bad. It's a start, but you know, to get things moving, it's not the standard. But Krishna consciousness is so perfect, you can even start with the negative and it will still give effect. It'll move you forward and purify you till you start appreciating the higher levels. So as an individual, then you can practice and do like this, and you know by identity there's some problems here. And where the problems are, you avoid those. And if there's any areas that aren't a problem, then those are the areas that if you need to interact, then you interact based on those. You know, is that okay?
Yes, Maharaj, thank you very much. It's okay. Absolutely clear. Yes.
Okay. So. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Tatvaji. So I think kind of get the idea. Yeah, now we're a bit over time.
I mean, I could make still question, but I don't know if, yeah.
No, I think it's better we stop.
Yeah.
For today. We'll continue next week.
Yes.
Because we only got through half of the purport, I think, so we still have the other half. Okay, so then we'll stop here today. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Ah,